Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. All violent crime is to be condemned, but there is something especially onerous about violent crime committed against people solely because of their color, religion, or sexual orientation. It's hate crime, and we've seen some of it recently in St. Louis. We'll talk about that in a few minutes, but first, compassion. It's at the other end of the emotional spectrum. It is much in evidence in the St. Louis County Police Department's chaplaincy program, where some two dozen members of local clergy minister to police officers and their families. It's been both a task and a test since the Ferguson unrest began in August. Joining me to talk about the program and the challenges that is faced is Rabbi Mark Shook, Senior Rabbi Emeritus at the Congregation Temple Israel. He is the chaplain coordinator for the St. Louis County Police Department. Rabbi Shook, thanks so much for being with us. Nice
Thank
to see
you. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
I've seen you quoted as saying that Ferguson has been a test for the chaplaincy program. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's extraordinary. It's unique in the length of time that it's been running. And what it does is it's not an occasional request for chaplain presence, but an ongoing day-to-day program that needs attention from the chaplaincy program. And so when you have a program that's made up of volunteers, it puts an extra strain on that program because not everybody can be there all the time at the times when we need them.
What sort of things have you been running into from the officers? What are they saying? What are their concerns? What's going on with them?
Well, a lot of the concern has to do with frustration, frustration with what they experience every day. Many of the officers resent the idea of collective guilt, that something that happened tragically and was awful in its own way has now cast aspersions on every one of them. They don't think of themselves as people who have committed crimes and have stepped on the rights of the community. They see themselves as serving and protecting the community, and they don't like the idea that that they're the ones that are receiving the brunt of the hostility. The other issue has to do with serving 12-hour shifts and what it's doing to family life. They haven't had a chance to see their family, their children, their wives, their husbands. They have not had a chance to take a break, to do anything that gets them away from this. And then on top of that, when they go home, its 24-hour news cycle is always Ferguson all the time, everywhere. And so they find themselves not able to just get a break and escape from it. And they're not doing it for sympathy or anything else. It's just frustrating to them.
You've been critical of the media's role in all of this.
Well, I've been critical. I've been critical only in the sense that sometimes there's no reflection, no time to take a pause and reflect. Sometimes when something gets reported and then it turns out that the opposite was correct, the correction somehow gets lost in the shuffle, and that frustrates me a great deal. The other thing is that there's not a lot of time and attention paid to waiting to see what reports say or what everything is instantaneous. And I think that we're all learning this. We're all getting used to instant media and knowing that every action will be scrutinized by video and video cameras and cell phone cameras and so on.
And then there's the social media aspect to it.
Well, that's frustrating because anyone can say anything on social media, and there will be some people who will pick it up and believe that whatever is said is absolute truth, and it's really hard to put things back. There was an old story about a guy who was trying to teach people how to, you know, recover things that you said that you wish you hadn't said, and it's like a bag of feathers. You can't get them back. Once you've unleashed the bag, the feathers are gone into the wind, and we can't get them all back. That's the problem.
And it's omnipresent. It's everywhere and touches everything.
Exactly.
You know, one of the things I think the general public doesn't really take into account when being critical of police officers, and there certainly is some reason to be critical of some officers, but not all of them should
be thought of as
villains.
I think there's reason to be critical of every one of us because we can all find parts of our professional lives we're not proud of.
Yeah. But what I was getting at was the families, as you mentioned before. They're really being buffeted by this as well.
Well, first it starts with actual verbal assaults by people standing on the other side of the police line. threats having been made, and those threats are very personal and not repeatable over the air. Those threats cause people to say, why am I doing this? Why am I in this profession? Am I doing any good? And they come to the profession with a sense of calling. They think of themselves having been called to this profession. It's not something they fell into. It was something that they really wanted to do because they thought of themselves as having something to contribute to society.
Have you found during the time you've been involved that there is a difference in the way officers in Ferguson, Ferguson officers, have been reacting to all this as opposed to the countywide police officers?
Well, I have to tell you that there's been a great deal of non-contact with Ferguson officers. That is, most of our chaplains are serving in a staging area in Ferguson that is solely dedicated to the Missouri Highway Patrol and the St. Louis County police officers. So occasionally a Ferguson officer would come in and go out, but there hasn't been a lot of interaction. So I can't tell you in all honesty what's going on there in terms of how the officers are feeling. In August, I had a chance to feel that because there was no effort to there's no effort now to exclude them, but there was no effort to make contact with them.
That surprises me a little bit. I had assumed that you were probably dealing to a very large degree with the Ferguson officers who may need the kind of help you can provide more than the others.
Well, you know, there are all kinds of jurisdictional issues. I hate to make it a bureaucratic thing, but in point of fact, we have to be invited. And we have not been invited to serve that community. So that's what happens.
Well, that too is a surprise to me. If you could, Rabbi Shook, walk me through exactly what would be a typical kind of, I don't want to say confrontation, a typical meeting.
We call them interactions.
Interactions is the word I was looking for. Yeah. What would be a typical interaction?
A typical interaction would take place where an officer would say hi. You'd say hi. How you doing? You know, doing okay. Anything I can get you, anything you need. Usually these are during break times. Mm. And most of the time the officers don't respond in terms of, well, if you really want to know, I want to sit down and talk with you for the next 30 minutes. Mm. That doesn't happen. What will happen if you say, how's it going? And maybe an officer wanted to say, you know, it was particularly rough out there and, you know, it's really frustrating and something like that. And you basically just try to encourage them to say, well, you know, how was it? What was it? You know, anything bother you? Sometimes the officer will respond, sometimes not. A lot of people don't understand that this chaplaincy is what we call a ministry of presence. There if you need them, but not intrusive. We're not going to hold hands and sing Kumbaya every 30 minutes with the groups that come in. At the same time, we're there. And every once in a while, it's really interesting, every once in a while an officer will come up to a chaplain. It's happened to me several times, happened to all the other chaplains at least once or twice. And they'll come up and say, do you mind if I speak with you for a minute? Hmm. And they'll have a conversation. The contents of the conversation usually have to do with a conflict between the mission they see themselves doing as police officers and how the community is treating them while they're doing that mission. Hmm. And the disconnect between the two of them is what's causing them, I would call, professional stress.
I'm assuming here that it would be difficult for many of them, too, to step forward because, let's face it, it's kind of a macho profession, and some might look upon that effort as maybe a sign of weakness.
I think there's less and less of that in the department and in many of the departments that we have contact with. Many of them are open to the presence of chaplains. Many of them appreciate the presence that are there. At the same time, they will want to make sure that their interaction is not looked upon by everyone in the room as, oh, he's going to have a conversation with the chaplain about thus and so. I wouldn't call it the kiss of death, but the moment when you're not going to have an interaction is if someone in a supervisory role says to you, oh, you need to talk to this guy over here. He really needs your help, kind of thing.
How much of the conversations you have are, if I can put it this way, religion-based versus psychology-based?
I would say it's 50-50.
Really?
Yeah. I think that it has to do with questions, as I mentioned before, like collective guilt. Mm-hmm. Someone wants me to atone for my sins, but I haven't sinned. And then you have a conversation about what's that like. And there's a sense that, yes, there are people involved in this tragic situation that probably have much to ask forgiveness for, but I don't even live in this area. I'm not there. I come up here and I'm doing my 12-hour shift and I'm just trying to protect life and property and kind of thing. And why am I being the one that's told that I need to repent of my sins?
Have you found any kind of an uptick in this since the Eric Garner grand jury decision, which came several weeks after the Michael Brown decision and kind of started a whole new wave of demonstrations and activity across the country?
I think there's a realization that the microscope is now being focused on police-civilian interactions and the use of force. And I think the long run result of that is going to be efforts at changing perhaps the training of officers when they have a force encounter. Those are the things, the positive things that can come out of this. But nothing positive can come out of it so long as we have to have officers stationed on the streets just to protect life and property, because they're not getting the training. This stuff is being canceled. The schedules are being rearranged and so on and so forth. And the good training and the good things that can come out of this can't come out yet until we have a peace in the community.
I think it's
a sort of maybe an armistice or some kind of peace.
I think there has been a general acknowledgement, and probably surprisingly to some, that the training hasn't been a little more comprehensive with regard to these interactions between officers and groups of people. You see that?
Actually, I don't. I think that the police department and the academy that is responsible for designing the training have been ramping up what they call crisis intervention training over the last 5 or 10 years, and it's training that even we ask our chaplains to go through. That's intensive 40 hours of working on the question of how do you tell the difference between someone who is a threat because he wants to be and someone who is a threat because he has a mental problem that you need to address.
Yeah, that's key. And again, something else that the general public probably doesn't understand. I mentioned to you, and I've mentioned it on the air before, that I've never known a police officer in previous life. I've gotten to know many of them, that none of them ever leaves the house on any given day without thinking, am I going to come home tonight?
It's a constant problem. It's a constant question. You cannot put on a bulletproof vest and know that this is on you and know why you have to wear it without thinking that the reason why I have to wear it is because somewhere, somehow, sometime there may be someone who poses a threat to my life.
Well, I read that the chaplains themselves, a part of your group, wear bulletproof vests.
We made it mandatory. We basically told all the chaplains are issued vests because they do ride-alongs with the officers in the police cars. And that's standard procedure. But when we were asking them to report to staging areas and other places, we just basically said, just wear your vest. Don't even give it another thought. Just put it on and don't think about it.
Well, let's come back. We'll talk more about your organization, other things that it's doing as well. My guest in studio is Rabbi Mark Shook. He is the chaplain coordinator for the St. Louis County Police Department's chaplaincy program. We'll continue our conversation. If you'd like to become a part of it, we'd love to have you. Give us a call at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. We'll take an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. If you'd like to send us a tweet, do so at STL on air. Back in a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back as we continue our conversation with Rabbi Mark Shook. He is the chaplain coordinator for the St. Louis County Police Department's chaplaincy program. And we've been talking about the job that this group of clergy has been doing since the Ferguson unrest and before. Before we continue to talk more about the group itself, I want to go back to the families because we talked about the kinds of things that the officers would want to talk about. What about the families? What questions do the wives and the kids have of you and members of your group?
Well, they want to know that everybody that's involved with their significant others, that everyone involved with them has their best interests at heart. They want to know that they're there for them as opposed to for some other purpose. What we found in this process is the fact that we have a group of people who we may have ignored and didn't realize. You know, I don't want to pose any cast any aspersions, but some of us, every time we see a police officer and we realize how young they are, we say, well, that's a sign of our old age because right. they're getting younger and younger. Well, police officers have parents, and it's the parents themselves that have been ignored in this process, that mm-hmm. mom and dad whose child grew up to become a police officer are now concerned for the well-being of their child, and they're no different than spouses and children in that regard. And so it's a whole new group that we have to interact with and find out what's going on. They're concerned that their sons and daughters on the line are getting the support they need from the entire department and the community. And they're not exactly, how should we say, shy violets when it comes to expressing themselves mm-hmm. about what they think is not happening or is happening on behalf of their kids. They become advocates for what goes on.
You were talking off the air about, and we had talked earlier about today's technology, social media and what have you, but today's technology comes into play in a very positive way, you had indicated.
A positive way in the sense that officers can always be in communication with their families through their cell phones. They can reassure family members that they're well or that whatever they're seeing on TV at the moment is something that they may or may not be involved. If they're involved in it, they're not going to be texting. But if they're on a break or something like that, they can reassure family members. It does calm things down, and it also allows them to deal with issues at home. Instead of waiting till they get there 12 hours later, they might be able to handle some problems along the way. And the other thing we're missing is that the children of these officers are being stressed as much as the officers' families, in the sense that kids are being told that their parents are at risk of not coming home in tip-top shape. And so they're having sleepless nights and they're having all kinds of issues.
Plus, they watch it on television and they see, maybe even see their own parent out there in full gear, if you will.
A lot of the officers and their families struggle with the question of should they even allow the TV to be on mm-hmm. when it's the evening news, because they know it's going to lead with something from the Ferguson issue, and they know that their kids are going to watch it, and then they're going to start having questions. So sometimes they've just turned off the TV.
Do officers ever talk about concerns about the occasional bad apple amongst them?
Always. Mm-hmm. And that is one of those things where they do, oh nuts. They have an oh nut moment, and I'm cleaning it up a little bit. But mm-hmm. the idea is that after trying to put together a quality response to whatever's going on, and then to have someone go off the reservation is mm-hmm. very frustrating for them.
Yeah, it's very, very damaging. It would have to be. About your group, tell me about it. You've got, I think 23 was the last number that I saw.
23 chaplains. Ideally, mm-hmm. we would have 24, three department chaplains, and that means that they serve department-wide, and then 21 precinct chaplains who serve specifically in the seven precincts and communities that are represented by the department. We have 11 religious denominations mm-hmm. represented, and we have a spectrum of the community in terms of minority representation. We have a Muslim chaplain and so on. So we are supposed to represent the community of officers. That is, we're supposed to reflect their religious affiliations. Most of the time, people don't care about where your ordination came from. Mm-hmm. They would want to have a conversation. They see they're not interested in picking apart between Episcopalians and Presbyterians and Methodists. Sometimes they have specific needs. Sometimes they want something to be blessed, and I hope I can share this. One of the officers wanted his bulletproof vest to be blessed, and he said to me, "Rabbi, if I can't find the priest, you can bless it." And I thought, I'm going to find this guy, the priest, because I don't want to be responsible if, God forbid, anything happened to him, that he would say my blessing wasn't as good as Father so-and-so.
The group was not formed as a result of the Ferguson problems.
This absolutely not.
Predated that.
This has been going on since the days, I believe, the earliest was in the days of when Robert DiGrazia was the police commissioner. And it was at that time it was only three chaplains, and then it has expanded over time to be this program. And I think it's a model program in many ways. I'm biased, but I think it's a model program in the sense that it creates a dynamic where the chaplains are training for service alongside the police and doing what they do best, which is things like death notification, grief support, things out in the community when needed. disaster response. The model was what had happened with the police department in Minneapolis, Minnesota with the I-35 bridge collapse. Yeah. And the idea was that the chaplains could be of service in a way that police officers have a tough time doing. We could do the things for which we are actually trained.
It's still not an easy job, is it, that kind of work? Let's take a call. Dennis is going to join us from DeSoto, Missouri. Dennis, thanks for waiting. You're on the air with Rabbi Mark Shook. Dennis, are you with us?
I'm here.
Go ahead.
I appreciate your show. Always enjoy listening to the conversations. And
great.
Certainly want to thank Rabbi Shook and the other volunteers for the work they do. I don't know if this is a little off topic or not. I certainly have a lot of sympathy for the police officers and the things they go through. I was struck by the rabbi's comment earlier that the police officers are offended, I don't know if I have his exact words right, by being blamed for things that they personally haven't done. And it struck me as interesting that, to a great extent, the black community has the same complaint. They're being stigmatized, and I think the community as well as the police do this. The criminal element within the black community means that the whole community gets treated with suspicion sometimes. I appreciate your listening to me, and I'll take comments off the air.
Thanks for the call, Dennis.
I think it's a fair observation. Truly, what this is all about on both, I hate to say both sides, because I'd like to think that we're one community, but we're not. But the issue of assuming someone is either good or bad based on a uniform or based on skin color is part of the tragedy of this whole thing. And it doesn't get any better because it's going one way or the other. Both of us, both sides of this dispute, need to recognize that the last thing we need is collective guilt.
Yeah, that's a bad weight to have to carry along. Have you found, or any of your colleagues ministered to members of the community during the course of your being out and about?
Often with interesting results. Mm-hmm. Some of us have found community members who have decided to demonstrate on behalf of the community of Ferguson and be a part of the demonstration online. And unfortunately, it's caused people to assume that because your role as a chaplain, a police chaplain, is such that you've determined what your position is on any given issue. Mm-hmm. And that is an assumption that is unfortunate. And at the same time, we see people that we know out there on the line, and we know that their position is an honest and heartfelt one. And at the same time, it's like, I'm really sorry to see them over there, but I understand why they're there.
Yeah. I have to say we run into that from time to time in our business as well. If we do a program like this in which we're giving a police perspective, there are some people out there who will occasionally think that we're showing some sort of bias or favoritism simply because we're raising another voice in this this whole dialogue. It's offsetting.
There's no such thing as objectivity.
All right. I have a tweet here from Anjanette said, why isn't a police chaplain part of the Ferguson Commission? Why aren't they bridges between police and the community?
That's a good question. Yeah. And I think that the question gets to the heart of I really have to walk a very fine line here because mm-hmm. one of the things we struggle with all the time is the division of St. Louis County into multiple municipalities. And so basically we're not supposed to go where we're not invited. Mm-hmm. And Ferguson is a city community unto itself. And that's what it is.
That's what it is. Yeah. What got you into it? You recently retired. Your activities.
I've been doing this since 1973.
Oh, you have? I was under the impression it was relatively recent.
No. I've been doing this since 1973. I had a few years off when I was in Atlantic City, New Jersey. But then when I came back, the department invited me to come back. I can't express what the fascination is, but it's a sense of having a role to play that can be positive and helpful, and at the same time with a great group of people.
And we should point out that the group of people that you're talking about are doing it on a voluntary basis. They're not compensated for it.
Chaplains are volunteers.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to take one more call before we have to say goodbye. Cecilia joins us from St. John. Cecilia, go ahead, but please make it quick.
Certainly. First of all, thank you for your service. And second, I'm wondering what we, the public, can do to actively help the police officers and their families.
Well, it's a wonderful thing. I have to tell you that when people say thank you for your service, you have no idea how important that is. That goes an awful long way. And it may not sound like much, but when someone just comes up out of the blue and says to a police officer, oh, by the way, thank you for your service, that's gold in the sense of letting people know that what they do, the dangers they face are appreciated. And that is just so terrific. And if it comes from people that police officers don't expect it from, so much the better.
Well, I'm going to say to you, Rabbi Mark Shook, thank you for your service on all fronts. It's been great talking to you and learning about the job that you and the others are doing.
Thank you so much.